top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 460 of the Really Awful Movies podcast, run from 2020. It's funny, if you're in the horror space and you think wheelchairs and characters in wheelchairs, your mind immediately turns to the pretty irascible and abrasive Franklin from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and of course the jock Mark and his generic football jersey in Friday the 13th Part 2, and we all know what happened to these two characters. And maybe for a deeper cut, perhaps the wheelchair belonging to the young boy Joseph in the 1980 Canadian classic The Changeling, of course bedecked with cobwebs and whatnot. But when you think of a character in a wheelchair, I mean, it's generally, largely speaking, at least for the ones that I can that spring to mind immediately, it's used for almost a comedic effect. Obviously, the changeling accepted because it's a inanimate object that comes to life, but certainly not with a character who has agency and is very, very well developed and who's got a life beyond just being used to heighten the body count in a comedic way. And in the case of obviously Friday the 13th, Mark's death it's one of the legendary kills in that franchise, along with the boxing decapitation from a later effort. But when you think Run, I mean, this is obviously a very, very ironic title, and it's by director Anish Chaganti. This one is one of these cat and mouse, very, very close affairs. It has very few characters like a Misery, but also has the chase element, like something like Alexandre Aja's P2. So it's a kind of a weird beast in that it's psychological and jarring, and it's really self-contained and until later on in the film where there's a bit of a breakout. But I think it's quite impactful and quite compelling to see, let's say, characters with disabilities brought to the forefront in a way that they aren't usually in horror. Now, we saw it, I think, recently with a film like Hush, which features a deaf character who's menaced in the woods at her cottage, which is quite effective. But we've seen it, obviously, in the past through a lot more blind characters, and you can think of something like a Peeping Tom or, obviously, the Lamberto Bava movie Demons. And tons of Italian films have blind characters, and Lucio Fulci, obviously, was known for playing with that kind of conceit. But even just to have a film that's driven by a disabled character I don't want to get into the weeds about who should or shouldn't be portraying different characters, because I think you can get a little silly with that. It almost degenerates into debates about whether Raging Bull should have starred a real boxer instead of Robert De Niro, and it gets a little bit crazy. But I think here with Keira Allen acquitting herself so amazingly, I mean, I don't think it would have really mattered, but I think it does lend an air of authenticity, and perhaps would have been a little more difficult to have someone able-bodied pull off the kinds of moves that she presumably routinely has to cope with as someone who has to live that way 24/7. So this one features a mom played by Sarah Paulson of the very, very hit and miss American Horror Story, but also of the exemplary Deadwood, who's this doting mother who we're introduced to. And she's a teacher, and she's helping her daughter trying to get into university. And as anyone who was trying to get into uni back in the day knows, It's all about getting the thick envelopes for acceptance, and woe is the person who gets the thin one. I've experienced both, and not so hot. But as we see in the outset, this is a film that has very, very tiny captions, and there's definitions featuring different medical maladies like arrhythmia, hemochromatosis, diabetes, and all the things that the lead character, whose name is Chloe, suffers from. And so we get all these different montages of blood checking and medicine and the various litany of the kind of medical regimens that Chloe has to go through just to go about her daily life. And in almost, dare I say, referencing Groundhog Day, but like the sort of sameness of her daily routine, waking up at 6:45 as per her digital clock and going through all the motions. I mean, literally so, in the case of her mom actually moving her legs to prevent muscle atrophy and going through different exercises. So presumably what we have here is a happy family out in the Washington wilderness in this old farmhouse, and a daughter who's asserting herself and becoming a young woman, quite exceptional in her abilities, and one could throw her into the nerd category with the various disparate and different interests and her ability to articulate herself. However, we see cracks in the foundation pretty quickly as Chloe begins to wonder and suspect that some of her meds aren't what they seem. In the first instance, I guess there's a wrap around one of the pill bottles, and it has her mother's name, and there's some sort of discrepancy around that she finds after peeling off one of the labels. And it turns out that after some digging, that she has to go out and sort of determine what this medicine could actually be. And there's quite neat machinations where she has to sort of go behind her mother's back to do things because, as luck would have it, the internet is out. And it speaks to just how dependent we've become on technology that's 20 years old, and many of us would be just absolutely incapable without that. It's quite a neat scene, whereas there's typically a conceit where someone's phone doesn't work and gets no reception, and it's often very clumsily handled as a narrative device, and they have to find a way to put people in a wilderness, which becomes increasingly absurd as coverage spans most, if not even some of the more remote areas, at least in North America. So when you have here a internet that goes out, it's actually quite believable in the setting, which is rural Pacific Northwest in the midst of these trees, and you could easily understand how the internet could go out and also not be very, very well serviced by whatever provider they have in the state because it's remote, whereas I can count upon quick service here in Toronto where I could get something back within a half an hour to an hour at the worst. Out there, they said even at one point, we might not get to it for a week. So Chloe is forced to, I guess, use subterfuge and guile and try and figure out what these particular meds and their origins and how she came to be taking them. And she actually calls strangers to use the internet, which is quite a neat idea. And then she finds out that the pill is not green, but in fact red, that she's supposed to be taking. And, she arranges an outing with her mom to see a film at the local cinema. When she goes to use the bathroom, she absconds to the local pharmacist and figures out that there's a medicine that she's taking that is actually meant and prescribed for pets. And so this is where this film starts to slowly and gradually reveal itself to have a sort of a Munchausen by proxy kind of a motif and effect, which is at first, admittedly, as you start to pick up on the various clues, it's a bit of a slog and a bit of a slow burn. But I think, in a way, Shaganti, as the director, willfully does this as a way to sort of mimic the viewer's experience about Chloe's everyday, which is quite a languid and quite a labored affair, too, because she can't do anything particularly quickly, even though she does zoom around in her wheelchair quite adroitly at times. But you got to figure, like, things that our listeners and I take for granted as an able-bodied person, this is something that she doesn't. So when you have this kind of pacing, I think it was intentionally done so you could really get into her head and you figure out all the different sort of hacks that she has lifestyle-wise to be able to make her day better. And this is, I think, quite expertly done as things start to ratchet up. And again, like at the beginning, you're sort of wondering, although you're kept interested and intrigued by the really strong performances by Paulson and Allen. They just keep you invested, not to mention some really good visuals. Right at the outset, when you see the birth of an infant in an incubator, you have this very, very particular, stark, very, very photographic cinematography that stands in good stead with this one. So you have at least nice visuals to look at and good performances as the proceedings gradually begin to ratchet up. And, you know, things progress to the point, we're going to get into spoiler territory here, where as Chloe figures out, her mother's dotingness and care for her is not what it appears. And there's some quite impactful moments in this one. And you could even say that she's been red-pilled, arguably. But I think it's there's some a particular instance, I think, where she's barred inside her bedroom and she tries to pick the lock with an Allen key, and it's you really get a sense of just how abused that she's that she is, and how her mother is really, really an awful and sadistic woman, and that's when things really start to pick up. And in one instance, I guess Chloe finds a soldering iron, which she uses to, I guess, build her own computers and do whatever different projects she has in the bedroom. And she uses that, and as well as various jerry-rigged together power cords to basically vault herself onto the roof and escape via the window, and then crack the neighboring window with a soldering iron and water. And it's really, really cool how she is basically able to MacGyver herself in different situations. And I think toward the end of this one, things start to really pick up, especially when you have the involvement of a sympathetic postal worker who sees Chloe by the side of the road and asks what's up. And then you have this, you know, wonderful exchange where Chloe's mom happens upon them in this rural road. Obviously, these rural settings are not served by too many roads. And they have this great interlocution where I guess the mom, I believe her name is Diane, tries to make her daughter out to be an unreliable narrator, to wit that it's actually a common trope in film where you explain that it's actually the new meds that someone is taking, and that they've gone to their head and they've mixed up their brain and scrambled it so that they're not acting right. And that's kind of a neat conceit. And of course the postal worker is siding with Chloe, who he seems to believe at the outset. And then I don't want to spoil things too much, but things really get sort of haywire toward the end of this one. And wow, the thing I think that would mar the proceedings, which are otherwise, we're going to segue into what we've learned here, but I think there's the pacing is really, really good and very deliberate at the outset. And they have just little tiny tells where they have, with the different regimen of meds. And they have a few things that I think astute viewers will pick up on more than maybe others. So this is actually a film that rewards people who pay close attention, which is good. And a runtime of 89 a run time, no pun intended, is something that I think serves in this one's favor as well, as things pick up midway in an unbelievable way. I mean, I was pretty captivated by this one in a way that I think I wasn't as much by Hush, which was a more straightforward home invasion style thriller that I don't think broke too many barriers or moved the needle too much when in terms of the horror space and really being innovative. But I think this one does in a very, very specific and very cool kind of way. The big reveal at the end, I don't think is necessarily that important when it comes to the proceedings. It adds a little bit of tension for sure, and they could have, I think, probably dispensed with it because it seemed a little too convenient to wrap up this narrative with a little bow at the end. And I don't think it was necessarily, I think if they would have kept things just straight ahead, and I don't even know particularly if the twist served any real purpose either, because there's enough drawn out tension and back and forth and cat and mouse that I think that was maybe a little excessive. But I think as horror goes these days, it's almost become expected and almost become something that is almost table stakes to have a real whiz-bang twist ending. Damn the torpedoes in terms of what happened prior. And I think this could have worked without that. Regardless, I think this is just really, really solid work. And with little, I think, touches of silliness that I think is more a hallmark or a function of the thriller genre itself rather than horror. And I would slot this one more into the thriller kind of space that is more of a misery style proceedings. I don't even know why, because it's not really too similar, but something like a Raising Cain by Brian De Palma and with John Lithgow starring in it. It has that kind of sort of at times wacky sensibility that for whatever reason De Palma is able to get away with. It veers into the crazy at times, and I think it gets a little bit too, I think perhaps almost to make up for the fact that it's so protracted and so deliberate in the first half, that things go really haywire, especially when our setting moves from a very particular, very specific, rural, bucolic, sprawling farmhouse to we get into the city and into the, when we start to engage with both the postal worker and also with mental health professionals in a hospital setting, when the Diane's daughter is finally admitted. And then there's a few scenes there that I think are pretty well handled as well, but I think perhaps a little bit less so, because when you have the very specific almost stifling quarters that this woman is confined to, and as I alluded to earlier, by no means is anything easy for this woman, nor does she particularly have any sort of camaraderie or engagement with the outside world in the way the principal of Hush did, with again FaceTiming the outside world and with ASL and frequent connections to people outside until, well, we don't want to get into a Hush spoiler, but there is a very, very very cloistered and very specific world that she occupies. And I think viewers will get a kick out of the mailman as well, Tom, who's played by Pat Healy, who's from Better Call Saul, really good as well. And this one breaks down a lot of barriers while I think accommodating and making you forget a little bit about some of the sillier, more wackier elements. But still, I mean, this is an idea, I think, that hasn't been too frequently explored in horror as well. So I think, really, really cool. I mean, speaking of misery, actually, one of the characters is actually Kathy Bates, an homage, obviously, to the eponymous actress from Misery. So there are sort of really neat touchstones here and neat little scenes. I mean, I think the interaction with the pharmacist was quite well handled, and the Chloe character uses her disability to sort of cut ahead in line to get immediate treatment before finding out that, well, this is a very small town indeed, that the pharmacist handles prescription duties for the local vet as well. So hopefully they don't get these things too confused, so you end up with worm medicine or something. But yeah, it's the Ritalin pills the feature as a big twist in the ending as well. And I think it's just really quite badass at times, and I think it is really quite captivating. And I think it is there's a little bit of, well, I mean, I don't want to, again, maybe I should cut it short here, but there is sort of a Chekhovian element that I don't think should necessarily have been introduced toward the end, to no spoilers here. And I think this one is well deserving of its plaudits and accolades, and did really good business for Hulu, and is, I think it's almost one of these things that critics are going to be look favorably upon just because of the fact that it actually features, again, the Bechdel male test, but it's women centric, and of course has a character with a disability and an actress who has one as well. And I'm not sure to the extent this is true, but Susan Peters, an ingenue film noir actress from the 40s. She apparently starred in The Sign of the Ram, I believe, who was maybe the first lead character to be wheelchair-bound. And she actually, I believe, got into had an accident. I think it might have been a hunting accident in which a bullet lodged in her spine. So later on in her career, she was unable to get the kind of ingenue, sexpot roles that she was early on in the late 40s when her career began. And so an interesting case there too of how people with disabilities have been succeeding or not, as the case may be in mainstream Hollywood films. So anyway, Run is certainly something worth watching, if a little bit flawed, as I suppose any film is, but quite neat too. Netflix acquired the international rights, so everyone can go see it. If you don't have Hulu, if you're, I believe that's an American streaming service, I'm not sure. So yeah, seek out this Lionsgate production. Just dynamite performances and just really, really solid. A little bit over the top, and I would have, I think, preferred a performance from Paulson that was more on the restrained side, a la Hereditary and whatnot, but I think that's a minor quibble. I think you'll have a majorly good time with this one. I think 3.5 out of 5 is really solid, and I am reticent about pushing it further only because I'm not overly keen on these types of horrors, although I do like medical body horror. And to the extent this one, I think they could have pushed more into pushing the envelope more into that side of things rather than the De Palma-esque thriller sort of histrionics. I think I really would have dug this one if it was like closer, quieter, tighter, a la Pin or something with a more Cronenbergian influence. That would have really resonated with me more. But as it stands, I think 3.5 out of 5 is solid. And continue to enjoy the show. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.